This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Boy, what would Gutenberg make of this moment we're in, right? From oral culture to manuscript culture to book-dominated culture to now this screen-dominated culture we're headed for. We're going to begin this hour with a little nostalgic talk about the book-dominated culture we may be leaving. At a certain point in school, if you got serious about reading in books, you took the leap, right? You went from picture-dominated kid books to real titles, the real books kids read in school. Are an important door to intellectual independence. They still are. The mind meets book relationship can be one of the first times a kid really explores his or her identity. So the world opened up when you read what?
Animal Farm was the most intriguing book I ever read in high school. It was turned very scary and left me with all the worst of humanity exposed.
The book that most influenced me is The Sun Also Rises by Ernest Hemingway. I read it when I was in high school, and the quote that's always stuck with me is, it's easy to be hard-boiled about everything during the day, but at night, it's another thing.
Thanks there to Alexia from Spencer, Mass, and Manny before her from South Florida. So many of you associate that leap with fiction. But while I had amazing experiences in school with imaginative literature, Kafka, Tolstoy, Dickens, I would also read chemistry books and physics textbooks, math books. All right, I was a little bit of a loner, okay? I remember this doctor who wrote a memoir of all his most amazing surgeries. I thought it was riveting. The nonfiction account of the sinking of the Titanic, A Night to Remember by Walter Lord. Wow, that was a classic for me. And there was this book about the Lincoln assassination. I've long forgotten the title. You can't even find it on Google, except that to me, it was completely unforgettable back there in the 60s. So what to read in school? This is a debate that arises out of schools and educators trying to make reading lists in the midst of this screen era we're entering. Reading lists more relevant to what kids will need to know after school in the job market. The new Common Core state standards dictate that nonfiction reading should make up 70% of a high school senior's reading curriculum across all disciplines. And so far, 46 states have either adopted these new standards or will be adopting them by next year. Come on and look at me and read them and read. So is this something you can get emotional about, fiction versus nonfiction for school kids? Let's say fiction is the Barry Manilow version of this song, and nonfiction more like Meatloaf. Come on and look at me and read them. That's where we begin. No one would confuse Meatloaf and Manilow, yet they are not that different, and the world needs to have room for both, don't you think? Did what you read in school make you weep? Call us at 8778-MY-TAKE with your favorite school reads or post at thetakeaway.org. On the line with us to discuss this issue is Catherine Gewirtz, assistant editor and lead reporter on Common Core State Standards at Education Week. Diana Zwinnick is a teacher and mom from the Chicago suburbs. She joins us from WBEZ in Chicago. And Diane Ryder is a mother and author of the blog, It's All Good Until You Burn Dinner. She joins us from Lino Lakes, Minnesota. Ladies, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
So, Diane, let me start with you. Where do you come down on this whole thing of fiction versus nonfiction and the ratio in schools for your own kids?
When I heard about the Common Core State Education Standards and that most of the kids' reading was going to be based on 70% nonfiction, I was a little bit sad just because I think there are so many great classic reads out there that the kids really need to get into. And maybe what needs to happen, and I imagine that's what will happen, is that children will be exposed to more of that as they grow up and reach those high school years. But I do agree that once they do get to that level of the high school senior, it is important to be able to read the nonfiction and get a greater understanding of that.
All right, that's Diane Ryder's view. She's a mother and author of a blog, It's All Good Until You Burn Dinner. Diana Zwinnick is a teacher and mom from the Chicago suburbs. Where do you come down on this whole ratio of fiction, nonfiction, and the core standards? You actually have to deal with them in the classroom.
Yes, I do. And I kind of have mixed feelings about them because as a educator, I like the fact that the Common Core standards are pushing us toward higher level thinking. They're pushing us towards having the students read like writers, and they're pushing us to really expose them to nonfiction at a level that we haven't done before. However, I don't want to give up books like The Great Gatsby and The Scarlet Letter and Shakespeare. And happily, I'm thinking that there might be some ways that we can actually use nonfiction to augment the fiction and maybe do both?
Well, there's the conundrum expressed by a teacher and a parent. Catherine Gewirtz is assistant editor and lead reporter on Common Core State Standards at Education Week. Where did they come from, these standards, and how long have they been coming?
There's one way of looking at this that would suggest that they've been coming for decades. There have been previous attempts to do what were then referred to as national standards, but they went down in flames. They became controversial in part because of the history social studies content in those standards. This set of standards, which is only mathematics and English language arts, originated several years ago as part of an initiative driven by the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, which is an organization of state education commissioners. Those groups brought governors and schools chiefs together and got a pretty unusual agreement of support to back the writing of shared standards, and they were careful to call them shared or common standards instead of national standards, because national gets kind of politically sensitive in this country when it comes to education. So there were teams of experts brought together, everything from teachers and university folks to people from organizations like the College Board and ACT, broad ranges of people, and some organizations funded by the Gates Foundation sat down in writing teams to put these things together and circulated them through states for feedback and reshaping. And they were issued formally in June of 2010. Then states started adopting them.
And the president of the College Board, David Coleman, who helped design these standards, actually has a fairly compelling quote in one of the reports on this. Says that there's too much self-expression in English classes particularly, and he wants to move away from that. Quote, it is rare in a working environment, he says, that someone says, Johnson, I need a market analysis by Friday, but before that I need a compelling account of your childhood. Is there a sense among teachers, Catherine Gewirtz, that there's an incompatibility between reading literature and being able to express yourself emotionally and writing a compelling argument?
Well, I think teachers, you know, are a varied lot, and there's going to be difference of opinion among teachers on this. And the standards are controversial for this and many other reasons, I might add. Some of what drove this emphasis on nonfiction is surveys and reports from employers and from college instructors that students are weak at things like building argument based on evidence, things like analysis, integration and synthesis of multiple documents, that they're better at saying how they feel than what they think and grounding it in evidence that actually backs up an argument and an interpretation.
That's Catherine Gewirtz. She's an education reporter who's been following this story for over 2 years. Diana Zwinnick, now, do you buy that sense of employers who say kids can express more of how they feel rather than do analysis, create an argument, deliver a set of instructions? And you have a high school kid who's going through this. I know that my high school kids get a lot of instruction in making arguments as well as reading literature these days. Diana?
I agree with you. I was just thinking when you were reading his quote that in my classroom, and I know in my son's classroom as well, not only do they read literature, but we make them write papers, we make them analyze the literature, argue for their opinion, supply textual evidence from what they read to show why they have these ideas from the things that they've from the thoughts that they've made while they've been reading this. So I don't entirely agree with him.
You don't entirely agree with Coleman, who says
with
that
Coleman.
Right. So you think kids right now are actually moving in the direction and teachers are moving them in the direction of being able to do both, express their feelings and make a decent argument?
I think so. As a matter of fact, in my high school classroom, under the curriculum, under the Illinois state standards that I'd been using, I felt like after middle school, we kind of put the student themselves outside of everything else that they're doing. And I felt like we were kind of erring in the other direction.
All right. Diane Ryder, are you worried at all about what we're discussing here?
I'm not necessarily worried because I know my child is on track. Reading has always been a huge part of our lifestyle from the time my kids were infants, pretty much, until my daughter graduated and my son is currently in high school as well. And I will just say that when we read to them as children, We didn't read stories about the solar system. I mean, we did a little bit of that, but it was a lot of adventure stories and that sort of thing. And I think the most important thing he gleaned from that was being able to comprehend and interpret what he was reading. And then in turn, he was able, and he still is, of course, obviously able to write very effectively. When my child reads at night, he doesn't curl up under the covers with a book about, you know, how electricity is made. He reads adventure stories, and that's basically classic literature, you know, that Diana was talking about has shaped the literature of today and the movies of today, the Twilights, the Harry Potters, the Hunger Games, that the kids really enjoy. If we didn't have the classic literature in our schools, we wouldn't have those stories.
But there's room for both. Diane, yes?
I do agree there's room for both. However, I don't think that fiction should be eliminated or really, honestly, reduced a great deal.
Diana Zwinnick, do you think there's room for both here?
I think there's room for both. I have students who really do not get into novels at all. And I know when I was teaching freshmen, one of the things that I did was I made sure that they sought out a biography, a literary nonfiction account of someone's life and the adventures that they had. And sometimes a student finds that they enjoy reading that. That means more to them than, say, The Lord of the Rings or another adventure story.
Catherine, I'm going to give you the last word. Is it appropriate to have employers dictating college, high school and middle school curricula?
I think that the answer you get to that is going to depend on whose ear it falls on. I mean, there are a lot of folks who argue that kids are not well enough prepared for the world of work, that it's too tilted toward college for everyone. I mean, this is controversial stuff. I think that there's some attempt to correct what's perceived as an imbalance, that maybe the sort of college-going idea of heavy literary preparation isn't serving everyone adequately, and that there's a building of content knowledge and skills that's been absent and needs to be rectified. Not everyone agrees with this. There's some that fear that there's going to be a loss here, a loss of literature. But there is a distribution envisioned by the standards. You know, the extent to which that reflects what's needed in college in the real world remains to be seen.
All right, Catherine Goertz, assistant editor and lead reporter on Common Core Standards at Education Week, Diana Zwinnick, a teacher and mom from the Chicago suburbs, and Diane Ryder, a mother and author of the blog It's All Good Until You Burn Dinner. We always want to hear from you. Dave from Plantation, Florida, called to let us know that this belongs at the top of any beginner's reader's list.
Number one for sure, Dr. Seuss. Easy to read, hits a child within everyone, makes you laugh, and always leaves a hidden meaning and message.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to weigh in on this conversation or anything else you hear. Coming up,
most Palestinians are blameless, right? Isn't there probably reasonable grounds for them to suspect that if he was murdered, it was Israel that did it?
Exhuming Yasser Arafat's body and looking for clues on the cause of his death 8 years ago. More on the inquiry and how it might affect Israeli-Palestinian peace